Now we're going to talk with Roger Hannigan Gilson, the writer for Hudson Valley Stories in the Times Union. And Roger, you did a story about crystals this week?
Yeah. It was a pretty fun one. Also right for the kind of holiday season where it was released in. It involved a lot of driving, but essentially I visited all the crystal shops slash mineral stores in the Hudson Valley, which we're defining not to include Westchester, Rockland, or Putnam counties, just for this context. Kind of took a look at them, talked to the store owners, and then came up with a list of the five best. Not that there was like hundreds to go through, there was about 11, but I picked out the five best.
And do crystal stores sell anything besides crystals, or what goes on in crystal stores?
It depends on the store. Essentially, there's kind of like two types of places that sell pretty rocks. There's crystal stores and mineral stores. Crystal stores are more metaphysical shops. They view the stones through kind of a spiritual light, spiritual context, that kind of thing. Whereas mineral stores are more science minded, I guess. They view them just as like aesthetically pleasing objects that are fun to collect, as opposed to them having any spiritual properties. So turns out there's a lot more crystal stores in the Hudson Valley than mineral shops. There's only one like true mineral shop. Well, no, there's two, but there's one that made the cut into the article. That is Stone Corner Minerals in Chatham, in Columbia County, which is a great store. There's like museum quality pieces in there. The rest were more like metaphysical stores that, some of them, their main product was crystals. Sometimes there were not. I mean, a lot of them, including like Dancing Hands Jewelry in New Paltz, like the majority of their stuff, or basically in that store, all their stuff was crystal based. A lot of it was crystal jewelry, and I was focused more on rough and polished crystals, as opposed to stuff that could be made out of them.
Do some of these stores do like tarot card readings, or do they do like other things? I mean, it just seems like selling rocks is a difficult business.
Not with me as a customer, but there a couple of them kind of offered a bunch more stuff. The Awareness Shop, which is in New Paltz, offered tarot card readings, as well as readings. Like there was a chakra reader there. They're not on site all the time, but you can book appointments with them. Crystal Connection, which is in Sullivan County, it's in Wurtsboro. It's this crazy place. It's amazing. It's a former Methodist church, and it went through several ownerships before this. It was a restaurant at one point, but now it's Crystal Connection, and as well as offering like a huge variety of crystals. There was like hundreds of different types. They do other things. Something they opened up, I think like 3 months ago, it was very recently, was this salt cave. It took them years to put together, but it's located in the basement directly underneath the steeple of the church. It's just a room of salt. The walls are all Himalayan block salt. You lay on a pad that is filled with thousands of crystal pebbles, including salt, and then you can breathe in atomized salt that they pump into the room, which is it's kind of like being at the beach, but there are purported, benefits to this kind of therapy.
And you, that was a sort of a different kind of story than you usually do, but you did another story that, I guess, more a traditional kind of news story.
Yeah, I do a lot of hard news, but, you know, it's fun doing crystal news once and again, especially when the other types of stories that you do involve home invasion robberies, which was the other story of the week. It's kind of sad all around. This man who we specifically do not name in the article, the victim of the crime heard some banging in the hallways. This was down at Hudson Terrace Apartments down by the river in Hudson. It was Christmas Eve. She heard some banging in the hallways. She opened the door to see what was going on. And the man forced his way into her apartment. She was kind of like, "What are you doing?" To which he responded, "What's up, man?" Which is an odd thing to say. He then started shoving her. She started shoving him towards the door. And then he took her phone and left into the interior hallway. He then took off all his clothing except for his underwear. And went outside, and police who were called by a third party about the push-in alleged robbery, found him out there allegedly, you know, hammering on the windows. He's being evaluated right now. 703, I believe. A 703. Exploration, you know, they're essentially trying to see if he is competent to stand trial, and you know, there's a possibility he's not. I talked to Hudson's police chief, Chief Franklin, and she said she had known him professionally. I mean, you know, as being a cop, basically since he's been around. You know, he was first arrested at 15. He's 30 now, she was saying. She seemed kind of compassionate about the situation. She said that, you know, the victim must have been terrified as they were. But the word she used was troubled, that he was a troubled man. I asked her if she thought there was any sexual intent with him taking his clothes off and banging on the windows, and she said no, she didn't believe that there was, that he was just going through a lot of mental difficulties.
So not a happy end of the year story there, but
no, it was it sounds like the
police at least are interested in helping him rather than just punishing him.
Well, I would say that you know, Chief Franklin showed some compassion there. He is charged with robbery first and burglary first. Both of those carry 15 years in jail. But you know, I mean, time will tell. I very much doubt he's going to get anything like that. You know, who knows what the future will bring, but, you know, plea bargains, you know, are applied to 95%+ of cases. And I'm sure various other factors are going to be taken into consideration, you know, if he is mentally struggling. On the other hand, he has a pretty extensive record, so that's going to be pushing it in the other direction. Mm-hmm.
And then you also wanted to mention a story that one of your colleagues wrote, that sort of a big local story this week.
Yeah. This one's not mine. This is by Brendan Lyons, who's the Capitol and investigations editor, and he writes a lot too. Really amazing reporter. But he found out that Paul Chyka, our former district attorney, he left office at the beginning of the year, so he was DA like 5 days ago. That 3 months ago, he asked the state police to probe the administration of former sheriff, Columbia County Sheriff Dave Bartlett, because he had gotten word that in Bartlett's former, you know, sheriff's office, there existed this giant box of complaints, of citizen complaints. This is kind of an issue. Well, this is an issue because in the mid-70s, and then it was really super codified in 2020, it became necessary to for a law enforcement division, you know, like a police agency of some sort, to supply defense attorneys with civilian complaints about an officer that, you know, made an arrest, that, you know, arrested their client. That way, you know, they can present to the jury or take into consideration, you know, complaints in the past, such as like, well, if this person, if this police officer lied, then like maybe the jury about a former thing, then maybe they should take that into consideration, the jury, when they're making a decision. It was a big box. It was called a banker's box full of police disciplinary records. And Paul Chryka had been trying to get this for quite some time, and he was unable to. He was getting to the point where he threatened to get a court order to acquire the box. And then he approached the state police, and the state police actually declined to investigate themselves, although they didn't say there shouldn't be an investigation. They just said that they weren't going to be handling it. So Chryka, this kind of came out. I won't tell you exactly how Brendan Lyons figured this out, but, you know, Chryka had to, or felt compelled to, I mean, it was the right ethical thing to do on his part, was he emailed all these defense attorneys telling him about the banker's box. Here's a quote. "It is clear that the contents of the box had to have been previously disclosed to me so that I, through assistant district attorneys and our paralegals, could redisclose some in accordance with the aforementioned laws, rules, opinions, and regulations." That's a very stilted way of putting it. But essentially, you know, all these disciplinary reports were supposed to be turned over to defense attorneys, and they never, ever would, and were. And also, Chryka had requested them, and they were not given to him. I actually bumped into this, if everyone recalls, the Harold Handy saga. In some of the court, that's where a sheriff's deputy and three others were arrested for allegedly beating a civilian at a party at the sheriff's deputy's house. The charges were eventually dismissed in part because the trial, or the case, went on for years and years, and you know, the top charges had been dismissed, which is different from people contending that an incident didn't occur. At any rate,
now, there were much more like legal issues than factual issues, right?
There's not a dispute that something happened that night and it was violent. The dispute, I mean, like Harold Handy, you know, he had to go to the hospital. He had a concussion. He was beat up real badly. But you know, that's a bit of an aside. That would take me like a half hour to explain.
Yeah, it's a very long, complicated story. Yeah.
Paul Chryka requested the disciplinary records for the sheriff's deputy, and Sheriff Bartlett just was refusing to hand anything over, saying that, you know, they didn't exist, that kind of thing. And Brendan Lyons, during his reportage, you know, essentially Bartlett had told him, me, other people, that there were no disciplinary records, that there had never been a civilian complaint during his tenure as sheriff, which just boggles them. I mean, that's just illogical. There's the possibility there was not a substantiated complaint, that is, the sheriff's office did not find it was legitimate, but you can question that too, because you know, it's an internal investigation. At any rate, both are legally supposed to be handed over to defense attorneys, but there was this giant box of them sitting in the sheriff's office for who knows how long. The person who found the box, who was actually in the sheriff's department, and kind of is a bit of a whistleblower. He's not known, but you know, he said that he believed that like a bunch of files were also taken from the box. So I mean, not even the complete log is in the box.
So just to make it clear, it seems like the former district attorney of Columbia County is accusing the former Columbia County sheriff of breaking the law by not making these documents public, as the law says they should be.
Pretty much. I'm going to edit you saying public because that suggests that you got to post them online or something. This was about them turned over to defense attorneys to assist them in defending their clients.
But the public is supposed to have access to these disciplinary records too, aren't they?
They are, and that's kind of...
The police just don't release them.
They are supposed to have access, yes. Like, there's not supposed to be, like, a public listing, but anyone is supposed to be able to request them, yeah, through a Freedom of Information Law request. I attempted to years ago, and I was told that none existed, which is clearly not the case.
I'm sure in the Handy case that Brendan Lyons also probably requested, or some other Times Union reporter requested the police records during that case. I can't imagine that somebody wouldn't have.
Yeah, I'm only pausing because I honestly for the moment forget whether I requested them then or when, you know, this became law after 2020. But in one of those instances, I did request police disciplinary reports from the sheriff, and he said there were none.
This is a problem statewide with the police not providing the information they are legally required to provide.
Yeah, it's something that Brendan told me he's going to be, you know, he's going to be widening the story and seeing if this is an issue around the state. I'm not going to speculate about what he's going to find, but, you know, police agencies traditionally are, they don't want to give up their disciplinary records. They were shielded from FOIL requests until 2020, so it's kind of new, I guess, but transparency. Obviously, I'm a journalist, so I'm a fan.
Yeah, it just seems like a law that got passed in 2020 that has is not being enforced and is not being the people that are breaking the law are the police.
Yeah, it's like who arrests the police kind of situation. You know, it's not like an arrestable offense. However, if Chaika went through with it and requested a court order saying they turn over the box, then, you know, and they didn't, that's in penal law. You're breaking a court order. So, I mean, that can carry time. You can get arrested for that. Yeah.
Can citizens or journalists get court orders to release documents?
Well, you know, it's always about requesting. You know, I mean, I can't like give a court order, but I could go into the legal system and try to convince a judge to put out a court order.
Right. Right. The Times Union could sue the Columbia County Sheriff to force them to turn these over and try to get a court order.
Oh yeah, we could definitely do that. Yes.
Yeah. All right, so that is stories in the paper. What are you working on for next week?
Well, coming out just in a couple hours, this is a Catskills story. There's been some progress made in talks between stakeholders in the Catskills in New York City about the way New York City purchases land in the Catskills. It's this big, complicated issue on the mountaintop. Essentially, New York City needs to buy land around its reservoirs in the region and then keep them undeveloped to protect the reservoirs from runoff and this kind of thing. But a lot of people in the Catskills they've really chafed under this. And over the years, the program has kind of bent more to locals' views about them having control and about the purchases being more targeted. So this hasn't been decided yet, but there might be more steps towards towards kind of the views of people in the Catskills about how this should happen.
And this is a long ongoing issue. I remember a couple of years ago, Wyndham was full of like little campaign signs that complaining about the DEC buying the land.
Yeah, DEP.
DEP, but, yeah, sorry, yeah.
Yeah, it's only one letter difference. Yeah. But no, there's a lot of saying complaining always makes it sound illegitimate. So I'm going to say they have a lot of issues with the way it buys land, definitely. I will say that, because this is, you know, just so no one's confused, it's not eminent domain. It's purchased on the open market, but like New York City owns 220 square miles of the Catskills right now through this, so it's a big deal up there.
Yeah, and I guess the town's worry that it limits future development, right? Is that the major concern?
That's part, yeah, because A, you can't build on the land, and B, you're even unable to, at the moment, run any utility lines through the land, and the Catskills, just because of their terrain, you know, and sparse population, they have a lot of trouble getting high-speed internet, cell phone service, just like any kind of utility up there, and when they can't run it through all this land, it just makes connecting everyone all the more difficult. But just a little preview, the DEP is kind of moving towards allowing utility lines to be run through land, but it's certainly not set in stone yet.
All right, well, we will look for that story in the Albany Times Union, and we thank you, Roger Hannigan-Gilson, for updating us on what you've been working on for the newspaper and what is coming out soon, and we'll talk to you again next Thursday.
All right, talk to you then. Thanks a lot.